from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Hey guys, good to have you with us. We're going to have a very good show today. This one's going to be a lot of fun. Couple things going to be coming up here over the course of our time together. Obviously, one of the things that we'll do a little bit of here and there is touch on these brand new NCAA rules. Obviously, you probably followed this a bit yesterday. Change to the transfer rule, change to the redshirt rule. I think this could have big implications for Georgia as soon as this season. We'll be talking about that coming up. I'm also going to bring on a guest later on, and I was mentioning this to our video audience a moment ago, who I really have been fascinated with the preseason preview that he's written. It's Pete Futak from College Football News. He said some really interesting things to say about Georgia, very optimistic about the future of UGA, some pretty bold claims about Georgia for this season. We'll look forward to doing that with Pete Futak here coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before that, though, let me start with a conversation here about the Georgia offense. And y'all know I just devour preseason content. I like the conversation we have about college football. One of my favorite things about college football is, and maybe I'm just biased because it's my favorite sport, but what I like about college football is the conversation that it generates. You know, we're able to talk about this stuff 12 months a year, 52 weeks a year, really 365 days a year for the most part. We're able to give our opinions and talk about what's going to happen in the upcoming season. Everything that gets written on every website is just more fodder for us to have that discussion. And, you know, for a team like Georgia, who burst onto the national scene a year ago, for the most part, the preseason content that's out there that previews UGA is going to, for the most part, echo the same theme over and over again. It's mostly going to be optimistic. It's certainly going to be impressed, I guess is the right word, with what Kirby Smart was able to do in year two. But occasionally you sort of find some conflicting data a little bit. You sort of find one outlet saying one thing in comparison to another outlet that's sort of taking maybe a sort of a contradictory approach, and we're sort of left to figure out what all that means. And an example of that here in terms of we quoted the other day from AL.com. That's a website over in Alabama that covers Alabama and Auburn primarily. And one of the things they do, and I think this is a pretty clever idea, they take the SEC SIDs. SID stands for Sports Information Director. Those are the sort of the public relations leaders for the SEC football programs. Most of them have been doing that job for decades. They have a lot of institutional memory when it comes to the SEC. And AL.com polls all these folks, the SEC SIDs, and they come up with sort of preseason rankings and preseason thoughts. And AL.com recently published a piece looking at who they think the SEC MVP is going to be for the upcoming season. And they had some other sort of individual superlatives as well, but it's the SEC MVP that we find to be interesting here, because what AL.com's poll of the SEC SID said, that's a lot of letters there for one sentence, but what it determined was that they expect Jake Fromm, the Georgia quarterback, to be the SEC MVP for this upcoming season. Now, this came up on SEC Country Live a bit yesterday. Obviously, there are a lot of non-Georgia fans who don't think that Fromm ought to be the guy there, and I don't think it's a given that Fromm will be the best quarterback or the best player, the most important or most valuable player for the SEC this season. I don't think that's by any stretch or by any means a given here. But I do think that Jake Fromm's got a case to be made. And I thought in the AL.com sort of, you know, capsule writing this up, I thought they did a pretty good job of kind of making that case for what Fromm might be able to do this season. The runner-up in the SEC SID voting was Drew Locke, the Missouri quarterback. You don't really hear much mention, at least in terms of the first or second spot, for guys like Jared Stidham or Tua Tagovailoa or some of the other quarterbacks in consideration. I don't think it's a stretch at all to say that Jake Fromm could outplay all those guys this season. And frankly, when we've looked at some of the preseason Heisman hype that has Tua ahead of Fromm, or some of the other, you know, national magazines that have sort of ranked Tua ahead of Fromm, there's an argument made for Tua Tagovailoa. I expect him to be a good quarterback, but this idea that is a no-brainer, that it's a guy that's only played sort of a brief window of football, is going to be better than Fromm, who's played an entire season, you know, I don't know that that's an obvious argument, and I don't know that's the kind of argument that should or ought to get universal agreement here. I mean, after all, go back to before the biggest stage in which Jake Fromm performed in all season long. Go back to Rose Bowl week, back in January or leading up to January the 1st. This is a guy that sort of got some fascination from many of the national media because for the first time they paid attention to a quarterback who had led as a true freshman his team to the college football playoff. And Kirby Smart explained to a bunch of outsiders to the Georgia program exactly what it is that Jake Fromm brings to the table. Here's Kirby Smart from last December looking ahead to Jake Fromm on the big stage of the Rose Bowl.
Jake continues to grow and mature. There was times that we were on the road and he led to help the team do 7-on-7s. He's grown as a leader among the team. And I think with each game and each situation he gets involved in, he tends to play better and understand the offense better. So they make the other players around him much better.
And that's exactly what Jake Fromm has, I think, did over the course of his true freshman season, and that's what I think the expectation would be for him this upcoming season as well. However, it's worth pointing out, this is where we sort of get some of that contradictory media information, because on the one hand, you've got a bunch of folks who know the SEC really well, the SEC's SID, saying, hey, Jake Fromm might be the league's MVP. But if you're the league's MVP, you ought to make other players in your team better. But yet Phil Steele, who is a guy that we quote from here from time to time on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, and his magazine that's on newsstands right now, he's got his preseason All-SEC team there. And at least if you look at the offensive side of this, you don't see any Georgia Bulldogs there on the first-team offense. Now, I think it's almost elementary to say this can't – both these statements can't be true. Either Jake Fromm's not the SEC's MVP, maybe he's not. But if he is the MVP, or if he's even in the conversation for the MVP, it seems hard to imagine that Georgia wouldn't have a few other players to end up getting some of that first-team All-SEC type consideration. Now, Phil Steele's not the official preseason All-SEC list, and it's the postseason list that matters anyway. But let's think about Fromm here for a moment. If he indeed is about to lead Georgia as a mature second-year player to even greater heights than he did year before, then there's going to be some rising tides that sort of are borne out by this. You're going to see a few other players benefit from that. I mean, take Terry Godwin, for instance, a wide receiver. That's the kind of guy who, you know, former five-star prospect coming out of high school, has really grown both, I think, in stature in terms of his physical demeanor and also in terms of his leadership quotient over the time at Georgia. I mean, isn't that the kind of guy that could potentially put an All-SEC season together if Jake Fromm really is about to take another big step forward in his sophomore season? In fact, when I look at the comments from you guys both live during the show every day and on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, I mean, one of the things that I think a lot of you guys have rebutted the outside opinions of UGA on more than anything else is when you don't see a lot of love being given to the Georgia wide receivers. Sometimes you even accuse me of not giving enough love to this group. I mean, I think there is that thought that Terry Godwin would really benefit from Jake Fromm here in a year two this season. Another guy along the same way, I think that's Isaac Nauta. Nauta doesn't get the nod as preseason All-SEC first-team tight end from Phil Steele. And, you know, Nada's got still, I think, a long way to go to live up to the hype of having been a former five-star tight end coming out of high school. After all, there are not a lot of former five-star tight ends anywhere. I mean, I think in the SEC the last half decade or so, there's only been two. Nada may very well be, I could be wrong about this, he may very well be the only former five-star tight end currently playing in college football right now. But if Jake Fromm is about to take a big step forward, if he's about to be an SEC MVP-type player, I mean, isn't there a chance that a guy like Isaac Nauta benefits from that as well? To say nothing of a guy like Andrew Thomas. I mean, I thought the weirdest thing overall about Phil Steele's ranking of the All-SEC first-team offense was the fact that you really don't see any Georgia offensive linemen on there. And this is not, you know, I think me having sour grapes over a preseason list. Opinions are what they are. They're just a conversation starter, sort of a topic to sort of get us all going and talking. But I think at the end of this season, when the official lists come out from like the coaches and the AP and, you know, the official tabulations of all SEC lists, at the end of the season, if Georgia doesn't have at least one offensive lineman on the All-SEC first team, I'm tempted to say two, but at least one, then something's gone very wrong here. I mean, I think Andrew Thomas moving over to the left tackle position, even though he's just a true sophomore, is certainly a candidate for that, to say nothing of guys like Lamont Gilyard, maybe Ben Cleveland, or some of the other newcomers who may have a chance to do the same thing here. So the bottom line for me is, I guess my overall opinion on the Georgia offense is probably somewhere in the middle. Obviously, I think that Fromm has a chance to be this league's most outstanding player and certainly this league's most outstanding quarterback, but I'll acknowledge the competition there is stiff. I expect big numbers from Drew Locke, if nothing else, and big seasons from Jarrett Stidham and Tua Tagovailoa. But ultimately, Fromm doesn't have to be the very best quarterback to make Georgia the very best offense that it can be. Fromm is likely going to be even better than he was a year ago when he's playing, and he'll certainly probably share some time with Justin Fields. But when Fromm is playing, he's likely to be even better than he was a year ago. And the Georgia offense overall is going to benefit from that. Terry Godwin, Isaac Nauta, to say nothing of the Georgia running back core, which we talk about a lot. This is truly a case where a rising tide probably does lift all ships. And the rising tide of Jake Fromm could provide a big boost for the Georgia offense this season. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Marco's Pizza, and we're glad you're with us no matter how you get to us. There's a lot of ways you can. You can do it on video. We're live every morning at 10 a.m. the Dog Nation video channels. It's Facebook. It's YouTube. It's the Dog Nation Twitter feed. Thanks for checking us out live and watching us, and thanks for your dropping your comments in the comment section. We look forward to that interaction each and every day with our Dog Day Q&A and all the other stuff that we do there on that. It's also fun to be on the radio at noon every single day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rep. We love our friends in the Classic City, and then in podcast form. Apple Podcasts, Android devices, the world-famous DogNation.com, SoundCloud. We appreciate you checking out Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza every day there for those of you that like to listen to the show. And by the way, speaking of Marco's Pizza, none of this would be possible without what they bring to us every single day. And Marco's got a reminder to you and a special offer. They want you to say hello to everyday value at Marco's. How about this? I love this for my family. If you've got a family you're trying to feed, this is the deal for you. Two medium, two topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. It's every store, every day. It's the Italian way. And I mean authentic Italian pizza. At a price like that, you cannot beat it. But you got to go to Marcos.com to find the location nearest you. Say hello to Primo. All right, in a few minutes, we'll say hello to ourselves to a really good guest today. A guy that I'm a fan of, longtime writer covering college football. His name is Pete Futak. Not easy to say necessarily, but his content's always top-notch from college football news. He has written a very detailed preview of Georgia for this upcoming season. He's got a lot of nice things to say about the Dogs. We'll talk to him about that. We'll also touch on with him, as I said off the top of the show today, these new NCAA rules, the redshirt rule has changed. All of a sudden now you can play four games and still be considered a redshirt freshman the following year. The transfer rule has changed. You don't have to ask for permission to transfer anymore. You simply have to give notice that you plan on transferring. And restrictions, for the most part, are going away here. So this is an interesting new landscape for college football. We'll talk to Pete Futak about that in a moment. We'll have some of our own ideas on this, too. And, of course, we'll take some of your comments on that subject here today as well. Before we get to that, though, I think one of the ideas over the course of our 3 years together here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza that I probably pounded into your head, in some cases more than you even want to hear. I certainly acknowledge that. But one of the ideas that I hit over and over again is the notion that a good Georgia fan, as I say, is supposed to be a Gator hater first and foremost. We've been doing the Gator hater countdown here on Dog Nation Daily for about 2 years. And a lot of you have not been listening for 2 years or watching for 2 years. So you have not been with the show before this started, but if you want to go back to the time that it began, the explanation that I made at the time was, I totally get that not every Georgia fan views Florida as Georgia's number one rival. I hear arguments all the time for why it should be Auburn. I hear some arguments for why it should be Georgia Tech. I hear from people up in North Georgia who say, I can't stand Tennessee. There are other legitimate arguments for the Georgia rivalry. I've never pretended that there weren't. What I said at the very time we started the Dog Nation Daily Gator Hitter Countdown is I wanted to try to use whatever influence I had on this platform to influence Georgia fans to dislike Florida. And for the most part, I like to think we've had some success on that. You guys have always been great to reach out to me on social media and let me know about your own hatred for the Florida Gators. I think Florida's a great benchmark for UGA. I think being better than Florida over the course of decades is a pretty good proving ground for how much success that you're going to have. That's the argument that I've kind of always made there. However, what ESPN has recently said, I guess, has raised my eyebrow a bit, because while I look at the long-range game of Florida being the chief rival for UGA, I will admit that I am not as worried about this year's game against Florida as maybe Georgia fans have been in the past when you think about going to Jacksonville to play the Gators. ESPN's take on this is slightly different. ESPN happens to think that this very well may be the toughest game or the most important game that Georgia plays all season. Toughest is probably the wrong description here. Most important, ESPN says so. Here's what Alex Scarborough has recently written at ESPN.com about the Georgia-Florida game. He says, there's an argument to be made that Florida is always the most important game on Georgia's schedule. That's something I would agree with. Here's what I don't agree with, though. He says, this year's offers even more intrigue, with Dan Mulling having set up shop in Gainesville, promising better results on offense, more heated rivalry, after saying of the Bulldogs winning the East, quote, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while. And for those of you that are not aware, that last line there from Dan Mullen is what led to the notion of Blind Eddie being on the stage with us here every single day. He is our own unofficial Dog Nation Daily mascot, because he is the blind squirrel that found the SEC championship a year ago. I frankly am not worried about Florida this season if you're Georgia. I don't think Florida has a quarterback. I think they have some talent. You know, Martez Ivey comes to mind. CC Jefferson comes to mind. But the kind of depth that we're used to seeing from a Florida roster, that is not something that I think there's a lot of. I just don't think it's the kind of Florida team that's capable of scaring Georgia this year. However, it's worth pointing out, as we played for you yesterday, the aforementioned Phil Steele is also high on Florida as a potential improved team this season. Here is Phil Steele from WJOX.
My most improved team this year, I'm going with the University of Florida. I think if it could go wrong, it went wrong last year for Florida. The suspended players, the injuries, losing the coach. And now they get a head coach in Dan Mullen stepping in there who has always overachieved my expectations. To be honest with you, I've always picked Mississippi State 6th or 7th in the West. They always finish higher than I want. So I think Mullen, when he inherits 19 returning starters, will have Florida playing much better ball this year.
So that's Phil Steele weighing in from sports radio station WJOX, but his thought that the Gators are going to be improved. And they may be improved, but for me, not improved enough to be a real threat to UGA, but you can certainly weigh in with your comments on that. It's good to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hope you enjoy Pete Futak from College Football News right now. I've been a longtime reader of College Football News. It is a great website that covers college football, and I really enjoyed the College Football News preview of the Georgia Bulldogs. The guy who leads that site is Pete Futak. He's nice enough to join us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Pete, thank you for your time. Really appreciate you being with us, and hope your summer's going well.
I'm doing just fine. How are you guys doing?
We are doing really well, and obviously I want to spend the lion's share of our time talking about Georgia, but if you don't mind, let me squeeze in here off the top. New NCAA rules, this is a big change for the sport, although I guess this stuff has been sort of kicked around now for a while. Red shirts, you can play 4 games and then still count as a red shirt season. You can give notice of transfer without having to ask for permission. Most coaches seem to think this is a really good idea. I'm assuming that you're probably in favor of this, too, because I really haven't heard anybody not be in favor of it. So assuming that you are in favor of it, I guess my question is, how do you think this is going to change the landscape of the sport starting this season?
Yeah, I don't know what the downside is on either side of it. I'm always all for anything that helps the players out. I'm always for players' rights and giving them more of a break. It really does, especially the transfer side of it. I hate the idea that whenever you get these guys who, and these coaches, like, well, you can't transfer here. I mean, you're talking about kids who are trying to better their futures. Coaches can always leave for other spots and do other things. And I've always been a big proponent, big fan of players being able to do what they want. And I like the Steve Spurrier way of thinking of this, where it's, you know what, if a guy doesn't want to be here, well, go and, you know, good luck and do what you need to do. In terms of the red shirt rule, all right, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this works. I think the biggest advantage is just player development. I know everyone's talking about injuries, but now what you can do is, let's say there's a blowout, you can get a true freshman, some real meaningful playing time without hurting him. I've always hated the idea where you could burn a year just because a kid has to go in for a couple plays here and there. Like what's he supposed to do? Say no to the coach?
Right.
And say, no, I'm not going in now? So I don't know the downside of any of this for any of it.
All right, let me shift gears here. The Georgia Bulldogs, as I said before, I liked the preview of UGA up at collegefootballnews.com. And I'm going to paraphrase one of the sentences in that preview where it was said something along the lines of, you know, Georgia lost a historic, you know, group of all-time great players and yet has a chance in the years going forward to be even better. And, Pete, as I'm reading that, one of the things that kind of comes to mind here is that's not the kind of thing that you probably would have read in a college football preview 5 or 10 years ago. I think there's more of an understanding of how recruiting impacts the sport. I think there's also sort of a growth to accept the fact that true freshmen can kind of play this game now, and redshirt freshmen and true sophomores are, even though they're relatively inexperienced, can be among the best players in a roster. And it sounds like, you know, you guys there at College Football News are kind of this same mindset that, you know, Georgia's sort of out-recruiting seemingly the pace at which it lost some of its, you know, all-time great players from a year ago.
It is, but you know what? To backtrack on a little bit of a point there, is that they used to do that under Mark Richt, too. I mean, he recruited his tail off for Georgia, obviously. And there are always great players, and there are always those years when they had, you know, just seemingly just overwhelming talent, particularly, the year where they had Matt Stafford, Knowshon Moreno, they were number one. You know, they've had seasons where they've had the talent, but they didn't get this far. For whatever reason, Kirby Smart has been able to be that guy to go from, you know, point B to point C in the whole process, and it's worked. So now it's not just that they're getting the talent, there's a feeling that they're doing something with it. So now, you know, on the good side, obviously you're thinking, all right, you at least got a program that's going to be in the hunt for the national championship every single year. It's going to be realistically in the hunt for the SEC championship every single year. The only downside of this is now you're part of the world where college football isn't as much fun, because now you're very quick as you're into the realm of, excuse me, of Alabama and Ohio State, and Clemson's in that world too, where this year, if you don't win a national championship, the season sucks. It's just, there's no, you know, yeah, an SEC championship, woo, fun. You know, but what are you going to do? Wear your SEC championship t-shirt when you lost the national championship? I mean, it's just not the same. And once you get to that level of a program, the expectations are higher. Everything's ramped up. So now, if you're George and you're Kirby Smart, you've got to get to the college football playoff, because that's where the bar is set. Because if you're not, if you're, you know, then you're just another program at this point if you don't get to the college football playoff.
I thought that was such a good point. I read that. I actually want to spend some time talking about that very issue, because I think a lot of Georgia fans are kind of coming to that realization here over the course of this offseason as well. But let me go back to what you were also addressing a moment ago, because one of my favorite things, I mean, obviously, Pete, as you're aware, our audience here is almost 99.999% Georgia fans. So we're squarely within the bubble of Dog Nation here. But when we have somebody kind of outside of that bubble, I do enjoy the outside perspective. And from the 10,000-foot view, it's probably true that there's not a great deal of difference between Mark Richt's recruiting and Kirby Smart's recruiting. But for the people who are listening to this show and sort of devoted to Georgia football, I mean, the one thing they'll tell you is that Kirby is magnitudes better as a recruiter because of how he's focused on the lines of scrimmage and how he's focused on the full roster, you know, 80, 81, 82 through 85 on the roster, probably deeper and better than it was in the Richt tenure when they only have 70 guys on scholarship. So I think from within the bubble of Dog Nation, I do think Georgia fans do see a pretty stark contrast between Kirby's recruiting and Richt's recruiting.
Oh, sure. There's a difference. He's nailing everything out. They're getting the guys that, you know, previously it's like, okay, well, you know, every year going into it, just assume Alabama is number one in recruiting and go from there. And now that's not the case anymore. So there is a difference between being, you know, ninth or tenth in recruiting every year and second, third, or even first in recruiting. There's just, you know, to my world, and this isn't just a, you know, a Georgia view, it's kind of an overall college football view. To me, I'm kind of a recruiting is overrated guy, and that as long as you're close to the pin, you're okay. To me, it doesn't matter if you're second or 15th, as long as you're close. The difference, though, being obviously to your point, is that you're right. Now they're getting the five-star guys who are, you know, just at another level. It's just a whole different world in terms of getting the elite of the elite guys. But yes, they did have those guys who, whether, you know, the recruiting was, you know, at, you know, number 15 in the country or number two, they did have those years under Richt where they were, at least according to the services, really, really, really good, or at least their players turned out to be really good. And obviously the NFL talent was always there, but Smart's doing something with it too. And he's doing something with it right away. You know, he did this last year mainly with, you know, he had a lot of his own guys, but he had a lot of Richt's players who got them to the national championship last year. So he's also tweaked something with the coaching on this too. So, he's been exactly what Georgia fans were hoping for, is that guy who could take him to that one extra step. And, you know, give him credit. That's what you're all looking for if you're one of these programs who just can't quite get over the hump. Well, they did that.
So you mentioned this a moment ago, that when you go to the college football playoff in a coach's second season, when you follow that up with the number one recruiting class, and when you have a lot of talent still back on that roster for this upcoming season, it is one of these deals of it's no fun unless you win at all. And, you know, Pete, I grew up an Atlanta Braves fan. It kind of reminds me of the place where the Braves were in the 90s, where it was either win the World Series or the season was sort of you know, considered a disappointment. And for Braves fans, that was a lot of stress and anguish a lot of those years. Now, obviously, Georgia fans hope it works out better here over the next few years. But it is a different mindset for a fan base when all of a sudden you break through that ceiling, you get to the college football playoff, and now there's really a very narrow definition of what success is, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, look at Alabama 2 years ago. I mean, they were within one defensive stop against Deshaun Watson, who's a pretty good football player, of having, you know, what arguably would have been, at least pillar to post, one of the greatest football seasons in college football history in terms of just the level of play, the team they played, the schedule. And it was an amazing year. They rolled through the season. They won another SEC championship. And yet, you would have thought the last 365 days or whatever between that and the winning the national championship again, it was like a funeral. Like, I do a bunch of different radio programs throughout Alabama, and it was always like, oh, what's wrong with Alabama? Is it slipping? Is it, like, they thought that you really did think someone had died.
Yeah.
Same thing with Ohio State, where, you know, especially, you know, the last couple of years where they've come so close to either got back to the playoff and got blown out 2 years ago, or they maybe should have been in last year and didn't. I mean, it's just, it's on the one hand, it's obviously a good thing that you want to have a program that's close to playing for the national championship. You love having the expectations there. But at the same time, it, like you said, it's almost like, okay, we have to get there or else. And to me, the new reality is if you get to the college football playoff, that's it. You know, that's the standard. It's so hard to win it. You know, everything's got to break the right way now. So as long as you just get to the college football playoff every year, give yourself a shot, you're doing your job. And the good part about this is now, you know, Kirby Smart in Georgia, like you said, they coming off a great year with a great recruiting class. Now the expectation is, yes, you're at that get to the college football playoff level every year.
Okay, so in the college football news preview of UGA, it stated pretty matter-of-factly that Jake Fromm will one day be an NFL starting quarterback. I thought that was a very interesting sentence, Pete, because that is not unanimous opinion around college football. Even some sort of opposing UGA fans or media across this region down here in SEC country will, I guess, be a little skeptical of Fromm in comparison to a Jared Stidham or a Tua Tagovailoa.
Sure.
What is it that you guys like about Fromm, maybe in a way that some other folks are a little skeptical if he can match in year two or exceed in year two what he did as a freshman in year one?
Case Keenum. He's kind of changed, I think, everything we can think about what a pro quarterback is. Look at Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield doesn't have NFL talent. I don't think he should have been the number one pick. He's not big enough. He doesn't have the arm. He's crazy accurate, and he's a baller. But you know what? He's the number one overall pick because he can make plays, and he knows how to just move an offense. Jake Fromm might not have, you know, the Josh Allen tools. You know, he might not have the ideal size, the ideal arm, everything you would want in an NFL quarterback. But, again, the Vikings got within a game of the Super Bowl with Case Keenum as quarterback. He's crazy accurate, and he's just a good baller. To me, what I love more than anything else about what Fromm did last year is here's a guy who's just 19 years old at the time, and he was the coolest guy in the room, you know, both Pasadena and in the national championship, where even when things were going wrong, he just seemed to kind of keep things going. He lost in that national championship loss is that for a stretch there against a defense that just absolutely destroyed Clemson the week before, or a couple weeks before, he was fine. You know, the stats might not have been through the roof, but he made the big plays that they needed to have to get into a position to win the national championship under the craziest of circumstances as a true freshman. You know, so guys like that who just have that kind of makeup are rare. But that's kind of the world now of, you know, recruiting, where these guys are coming out of high school ready to go right out of the box. So obviously when you got a guy like Justin Fields, that's just a serious talent, obviously, with everything there that you have to develop. You have to get in the lineup. You have to get on the field. But at the same time, I think Fromm's one of those guys who's going to kick around the NFL and make a whole lot of money. Maybe not as the next Tom Brady, but certainly as a guy who can play in the league.
All right, let's finish up with this, and this may be a point that you and I may have a little bit of disagreement on. It sounds like you're higher on some of the other teams in the SEC East this season than I am. Obviously, you can make a strong case for South Carolina. I think that Debo Samuel's return there makes that not only a pretty good team, but probably a pretty fun team to watch. But I am just not a believer in Florida. I made that case a bit before you joined us. Tennessee kind of the same way, unless Keller Chris comes and lights the world on fire. I just don't think for Dan Mullen at Florida in particular, there's enough talent this season to do anything. I think that McElwain really left that roster in deficient shape. And, you know, if Mullen's the guy that turns that around, I just think it's going to take a few years to do it because I just see a lot of holes in comparison to what the typical standard for Florida is. But it sounds like you kind of disagree with that.
Well, the difference being that, yes, maybe they might not have the talent compared to past Florida teams, and they certainly don't have the highest end of talent compared to Georgia. But there's more talent than Dan Mullen had at Mississippi State.
Sure.
You know, so if you've got a team that has the defense that's going, they're going to be great on defense again. They just couldn't get that offense going. So if you can do something on offense, if you can get that passing game going just a little bit, Tennessee and Florida kind of the same boat, different thing, where Tennessee had no offense last year, but you could tell that there is a rebuild being done. Even though, going back to recruiting, Butch Jones had a whale of a recruiting class, I want to say it was 3 years ago, and his recruiting level was at a, it was pretty decent. They couldn't develop players. So now it's up to Pruitt to be up that thing and get a little bit of offense. And all of a sudden, that bad season of last year can turn pretty quickly. So at least, at the very least, you know, from the Georgia perspective, Tennessee is going to be better. You know, they're not going to win the SEC East, but they're going to at least not be a speed bump like they were last year. And they did have their chances. You know, if they didn't lose, you know, on that last second throw, you know, to Florida. And they had a couple of, you know, they had a couple other close calls along the way, and then they just melted down, obviously, at the end. But there's enough talent there where they could be a danger. Florida, I do think, can flip that switch quickly. Remember, you know, they did go to two straight SEC championships under Jim McElwain. So there's enough there where if you get the right formula on the right day, you know, they can absolutely rise up and rock just that one day in a cocktail party where they can pull off that, you know, that upset win. I'm not saying they're going to win the national championship or anything, but they could be good enough under Mullen to just have that tweak offensively right out of the gate. So if you're Georgia, again, going back to, all right, what are you worried about here? Well, we have the article up today, the path to the playoff for Georgia. Well, first of all, that opener in the SEC at South Carolina, like you mentioned, is just dangerous. That's the one. You got to get past that one first, because with South Carolina, they miss everybody good from the West. So there's a chance if you lose to South Carolina, you can run the table if you're Georgia and still not necessarily control your SEC destiny. And then from there, you still have to deal with the road game at LSU. And then on the wrong day, so Tennessee and Florida, again, are going to be better. Missouri is going to be okay. So you just got to avoid those landmines. But overall, the SEC East is going to be better. So if you're Georgia, you know what? It might just take, if the SEC East is better, you can't lose that one early game because you need that buffer late. So this might be an amazing team that goes 10-2, and then the season blows up. That's the Alabama genius where, you know, every year they don't lose that second game. Yeah. And if you're Georgia, you're going to lose once along the way. Just don't lose that second one, and don't lose the key one to South Carolina early on.
It should be a fascinating season. College Football News does a great job covering it. Pete, for people who want more of your content, how should we tell people to find you?
Very simple, collegefootballnews.com. Like I said, up today, we have the homepage, path to the playoff for Georgia, the five steps to get back there. And, you know, they're going to be good enough where at the very least, you know, you're going to be preseason top three in every poll. It's right there for a lot of excitement. It's kind of what you've been hoping for years, and now you got it under Kirby Smart.
No doubt about that. Pete, thanks for being on the program today. We'll look forward to talking
to you
soon.
Hey, Tom, have a good one. Thanks for having me on.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Interesting stuff there from Pete Butak there from College Football News. High on Georgia, maybe a little higher on the rest of the SEC East than I am, but as we said, that's what's kind of fun about this time of year, a chance to debate some of that kind of stuff. We love doing that. We like bringing this time of year some of those outside voices in to kind of give us their perspective on some of this kind of stuff. By the way, hope you'll check us out, SEC Country Live, later on this afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the SEC Country video channels. We'll talk more about everything else that's happening around the world of the SEC. And speaking of that, as we get ready to transition to our SEC Through here, I will remind you that this weekend is a very big weekend for the dad in your life. I am a dad now. I also have a dad. He's going to be on vacation this weekend, so I won't get to see him. But Father's Day, you're thinking about doing something fun? How about Kroger? They got some great stuff in mind. They're going hog wild this weekend, and I do mean hog wild. You can stop by your local Atlanta Kroger between now and June 19th for savings on pork chops, ribs, Boston butt, and more. It's the perfect way to celebrate this weekend, and is it ever. What a great time for your outdoor cookout to bring some of that kind of stuff to the table there. That'll certainly make the dad in your life happy. And if you are a dad, maybe you drop that hint about getting some of that stuff going on for your own celebration. This is apropos of nothing, but I was talking to Jeff Sintel this morning for a couple of minutes before the show started. And he was lamenting the fact that on his Father's Day this Sunday, it's also his son's birthday. He was already worried about not getting a lot of attention for Father's Day, having to share the day with his son, who is turning 10 there that day. So good stuff from Jeff Sintel on that point. when we had Pete Futak on, by the way, a moment ago, one of the things that we talked about were these new NCAA rules. And if you're wondering and trying to catch up with what all this is, you know, now, starting this upcoming season, you can play in as many as four games and you can still be considered a redshirt freshman for the following year, or that could just be considered a redshirt year at whatever year you would take it. That's obviously a huge change from where things were before. You had the complicated medical redshirt issue before, and now it's four games of playing. Play as much as you want during those four games, and you can still call it a redshirt season. I think this is a great idea. As Pete Futak said a moment ago, what's the real argument against it? I don't think there is one. You know, I am in favor of a very liberal policy for players. Liberal transfers, we'll get to that in a moment. Liberal definition of what keeps you eligible, I'm really for that too, and this is an example of that. And it's also interesting, and I'm sure in the days ahead, when we have Jeff Sintel and Chip Towers on, we'll talk about the specific implications for Georgia, but you can obviously think of one at least here right away. For the people concerned about the fact that Justin Fields and Jake Fromm align so closely in terms of their eligibility, Fromm's just a year ahead, well, you could play Fields in four games and still consider him a redshirt freshman next year in what would be Fromm's junior season. You could potentially put some distance here between these two quarterbacks, which allows maybe to hold on to both of them longer. There's obviously a lot to do before you get to that point. I mean, honestly, I think that Justin Fields is going to play in more than four games for Georgia this season, but you would have that choice, you would have that option as a way of finding a way to make this work. After all, Fields has said in the past that, you know, he studied the notion of redshirt freshmen and seen the success they've had after that redshirt year. So, I mean, that's just one example of many in terms of how this could have implications going forward for Georgia. You can also look back to the past and think about all the ways in which Georgia history is slightly different had this rule been different. Transfer rule two. Now, I think we go from a period of permission to now just a period of notification. It used to be, hey, I want to transfer. Is that okay? Now it's, I'm going to transfer, and okay, here's where I'm going. So the power has been given over the player here. You know, some, I guess, old guard folks are going to sort of present this as potentially the Wild West. You know, I am, for the most part, I guess, pretty conservative. I'm slow to change on a lot of things. I'm a late adopter for almost everything. On this, though, I don't mind jumping in with both feet. I don't think this is going to lead to some sort of hysteria, boy, that some people might try to tell you it would. By the way, a couple more things to get to here. I mentioned off the top of the show the Phil Steele preseason All-SEC team. You can find the Phil Steele College Football Preview wherever newsstands are. Assuming you can still find a newsstand, you can find the Phil Steele College Football Preview. And, you know, I like this magazine. I like all magazines. I mentioned the fact no Georgia guys make the first team offense. Does have Jared Stidham there as the first team quarterback. You know, Stidham is a guy I think there's a strong argument to be made for him in comparison to some of these other quarterbacks like Tua Tagovailoa and even Jake Fromm. I think this is a good year for quarterbacks in the SEC. Stidham's obviously in that group. I mentioned Deebo Samuel with Pete Futak a moment ago. I think that Samuel is both a very good player and a fun player to watch. I think he's going to have a dynamic impact on the SEC this season, and I expect South Carolina to put a pretty good record together, and I think that Deebo will be because of that. On defense, a couple of Georgia guys do make first-team All-SEC. Probably no surprise here, DeAndre Baker makes that list. Baker has a great chance of being a first-round pick next spring in the NFL draft, and he's going to get all kinds of preseason accolades like this, and my guess is he lives up to it on the season. We certainly saw that kind of play for him during the year, and more examples of the growth of J.R. Reed here as a big-time name. Once again, he comes in on Phil Steele's preseason All-SEC list as the number one first-team safety. So a lot of love being shown to J.R. Reed, and obviously UGA fans like that a lot. Let me do one more quick SEC story, and I know I'm running a little late here, but let me squeeze this in. I mentioned at the beginning of our show, or near the beginning of our show, that ESPN in its preseason top 25 has looked at the most important games for each of its preseason top 25 teams. I told you that Georgia's most important game, according to ESPN, is Florida. I explain why I kind of disagree with that. I don't want to be caught, you know, overlooking any opponent, but the fact of the matter is I'm not a coach, I'm not a player. You know, I can sort of share my opinion in an unfettered manner. I'm not that worried about Florida for this upcoming season. But if you are curious about the other games, Alabama, the preseason number one for ESPN. Most important game, they say, is Auburn. Easy to understand why that's the case. How about Mississippi State's most important game being Florida, too? Nice rematch, Dan Mullen going back to Starkville. That one could be a lot of fun. I understand where ESPN's coming from when it says for Auburn that its most important game is Washington. I do think that game has a lot of significance given the fact that Auburn's got to justify the big raise for Gus Malzahn. And they got to prove that winning the SEC West a year ago was more than just a fluke. After all, Auburn's got a few of these flukes over the years. The 2010 National Championship feels that way. The 2013 SEC Championship feels that way. Does the 2017 West Division title end up feeling that way? What happens in 2018 will go a long way towards determining that. And then how about highlighting the Clemson game against Texas A&M? That's a really interesting game to think about, what the Aggies might be able to do there in Jimbo Fisher's first season, maybe pulling the upset against Clemson. That'll get you excited about that game. They also mentioned South Carolina and Missouri, which is a fun game for the Gamecocks, who do show up in ESPN's preseason top 25. We'll have more on this later on this afternoon in SEC Country Live. For now, we'll wrap up our SEC through. And here every day at this time on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, one of the things we like doing is sort of finding out a little bit more about what you think, giving you a chance to weigh in on the subject matter of the day. We'll call that our Dog Day Q&A because for a lot of people, this is considered to be the dog days of summer, but we think of this in a slightly different way. This is not the D-O-G, dog days. That's something negative. This is D-A-W-G because, after all, we think there are going to be plenty of good dog days ahead for Georgia once the season begins. Why not celebrate some of that this summer? And today, it's a pretty simple, straightforward dog day Q&A question. I'd like to get your thoughts on the new redshirt transfer rule. It sounds like when Pete Futak and I were discussing this a moment ago, for the most part, we think there's really no argument against this. Is there a side of this we haven't considered? We'll let you weigh in on that, both on the Facebook and the YouTube page. And, of course, you can also hit me up on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. A lot of folks also weighing in kind of on the Dan Mullen Florida issue. Jeff Hensley says, I missed what Dan Mullen actually won when he was at Mississippi State. Yeah, you know, listen. Mullen became a little bit of a media darling at Mississippi State because the media, for the most part, likes plucky underdogs. I've said before that there is a bias against the top teams in college football, not because the media hates those teams, just because the media, I think, hates the process by which you win national championships. There's a degree to which it's boring. You know, if you look at Alabama, they have gotten to the top by amassing more talent than everybody else and just strangling their opponents in every game they play. Georgia is sort of following that same blueprint. Last year's an example of that. I don't think the media necessarily likes that style of play quite as much because, you know, it's not creative, it's not fun, it's not quirky, it's just an overwhelming show of force. Now, the fans of the teams like that, but the media likes Dan Mullen doing more with the less at Mississippi State, you know, pulling the occasional upset. It's just something interesting and fun for them, and so I think that Mullen goes to Florida with a lot of steam from the media, but at Florida, you're not the plucky underdog anymore. You don't get to exceed expectations because the bar is set so low. It's either championship or bust for Florida because they've had two coaches win national championships for that program, and I think that that's going to be potentially a rude awakening for Mullen when he gets there to Florida. Let me hit YouTube here for a moment. I'll pull up some comments there on the YouTube feed. And by the way, I appreciate those of you who watch Dog Nation Daily on YouTube every single day. Enrique Murillo says, going back to our Dog Day Q&A, I personally like the redshirt rule. It's going to help the players who get injured who have more talented player playing in front of them due to seniority. Eason could have been redshirted. Yeah, listen, I think that Enrique is hitting on one of the reasons why I like it so much as well. I am for whatever benefits players, and it's hard to argue that these rule changes don't greatly benefit the players. All right, we will get ready to wrap up our program today. Thanks for being with us. Special thanks to Pete Futak from College Football News as well. It's good to have the phones working again. I said this to our video audience off the top of the show. We had a little bit of bad luck here this week, but you know what? We are always fighting through adversity. We attack the day, like Kirby Smart says. But at least we try to do that. And a lot of talk about Florida here today, both in terms of our interview and what ESPN wrote about the upcoming game for the Dogs against Florida. I agree with the first part of that and disagree with the second. It isn't almost every year the most important game UGA plays, but in some years it's not as much of a sweat job as others. I think this is an example of Florida still having a long way to go to being up there in the direction of the Georgia Bulldogs, and our buddy Eddie loves that here on the desk with us each and every day. And speaking of the Gators, every day at this time we do the same thing. We give you our Gator Hater Countdown. 135 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville, beats Florida again. Thanks for being a part of it. We'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza.